We're back on the air. This is Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Jeffrey Davis. I'm the host of the show, also chairman of the board, CEO of Mage LLC. And I'm here again at the lovely offices in the Prudential Center of Tarlow, Breedhart & Rogers, the law firm. And my co-host, that means, is Mark Furman. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Jeff. Great to be with you.
Thank you very much. You know, I'm a big fan of the Wagner Law Group, and last week we were able to go visit them, Radio Entrepreneurs, and I also got to talk with David Gabor. David was just an outstanding person to talk with, and we were so excited being with him, we asked him to come back again. David, what's the topic this week, and welcome.
Actually, well, thank you very much, and I had fun last week talking about the issues in the wage and hour world in employment law, and I wanted to talk more with you about the changes that the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and the EEO wants. And the reason I want to talk about it, and now is a very good time, is because it's going to be a huge challenge for companies to get ready for filing the revised EEO-1 form, which, although it's not until March of 2018, it's going to take at least a year or so for companies to get ready.
What's that form?
The EEO-1 form is a form that companies that have 100 or more employees or companies involved in government contracts with 50 or more employees have to file on an annual basis. The way it's done right now is the form just collects census information and it's due in September each year. The new form coming out in March 2018 has two new components. One is pay data, and the second is information regarding the number of hours worked by people broken down into different categories. And the big difference is, instead of 220 different boxes, the new form has 3,600, and it can be used by the EEOC to target companies where there's pay disparities. So here's a challenge. If you wait until 2018 to work on it, you don't have a chance to see whether your company has any kind of pay disparities based upon gender, race, and ethnicity. So you really need to start early. The second part of the problem is most of my clients are busy. Comes January, February, March, they're working on comp cycles. In November, December, they're rolling out their health plans. So if they wait until the fall of 2017, and they try to do this at the same time that they're dealing with health insurance and the comp cycles, it's going to be a disaster. So what I'm asking and urging companies to do is get your pay data in January this year. Get through your comp cycle and then make a priority for March or April to do a mock EEO-1. You can get the revised form, take the information, do a mock form, and number one, see how long it's going to take. Number two, see whether you've got the resources in-house to do it or you need to bring in a vendor. And then three, have an expert study those forms to see whether you've got a disparity, and then you can start to figure out how to correct that disparity.
So let's assume I'll be your punching bag. I'm an entrepreneur. Let's assume I don't do it. What's the consequences?
If you don't do it now, what's going to happen, if you don't file on time, you will then become a red flag at the EEOC, and they'll be looking very closely at anything that you do. Two, if you don't correct pay disparities or put a program in place, the EEOC is going to push a couple of buttons, and they're going to bring a claim against you. It'll be very easy for them to do it because it's all being done through software. And also, private attorneys have access to this information, and they'll pursue claims. There are a lot of lawyers out there who love to bring class action cases. This is going to be a field day for them.
So this is a public record?
It's not as much a public record as it's easy to access through a subpoena.
Oh, okay.
Or a Freedom of Information
request.
So if
I was a contingency litigator, would this be where I'd be searching for my data in the next year?
Absolutely. You'll see a vast increase of cases brought by firms such as that well-known law firm, Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. And it's going to be a real nightmare if people don't take the steps now to correct. Another thing, the EEOC has published document saying they want companies to do their own analysis, self-audits, in 2017. And by the way, one of the other problems is, let's suppose you do have a group of people who are protected, who are underpaid. You have, well, you could raise their salaries up $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 and not get a whole lot of value out of it. Or you can start programs, training programs, universities, call it whatever you want. But you take groups of people who work for you, put them in a program, give them the training, whether it's a skill, a software, a technical skill, whether it's teaching them management skills, create a way to advance them inside your company. And that's going to accomplish what the EEOC wants. It's also incredibly great for morale and employee engagement. Imagine you roll out a program like this and you tell your employees, we're invested in you. Words are great. Actions are even better. This would be an action.
So you give the EEOC all this data about what people are paid, and I take it you have to disclose the gender and race and ethnicity. And then how does the concept of merit-based pay come into play?
The way the form is broken down, there's, I think, 11 or 12 different categories of types of jobs. For example, an executive, a professional, a sales, administrative, different jobs. And then in each one, there's a different pay, up to $19,000, $19,000 to $24,000, $24,000 to $30,000, all the way up to $208,000 and above. So everyone's going to fall into one of those categories. And then you go across and you've got gender, male and female. And you have Hispanic or Latino, Caucasian, Black or African American, Asian, Native American, or Alaskan are the different categories. And everyone's going to fall into one of those, and that's where you get your 3,600 different boxes to enter the information. The pay data is based upon your W-2 for 2017. The employer can pick one pay period in the last quarter of the year, and all the employees go in. And by the way, if an employee has left at some point in 2017 or early 2018, they're still counted. So it's a W-2 income that's used for the form. And that's why if you're going to bring up a salary, you've got to raise a salary early in 2017. Otherwise, you're not going to have time to bridge that gap unless you're giving out huge bonuses in December. Okay. So going back to corrective action, one other really important thing, and that is if you do start a program, like let's say, for example, you start a university or a program along those lines, or you do an analysis and you spend the time, you make the effort, and you start to make some adjustments, document that information. Keep really good records of everything you're doing. Because if you do submit your EEO-1 form, and if you do have some disparities, but you're making an effort to correct them, then you're giving the EEOC what they're looking for.
So they're looking for a process, not a final solution right away.
They would prefer the final solution, but if you've got a process and it's being done in good faith, that's a huge benefit for you.
With the goal in mind.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Interesting.
And that's really the biggest message I have right now for companies. There's another thing that is happening right now, and those are the Department of Labor overtime exemption rules. And they were supposed to go into effect on December 1st, and November 22nd there was an injunction issued. An update on that is we're up in the Fifth Circuit. They've had arguments. The Department of Labor wants the Fifth Circuit to move really, really quickly. There's no way to know for sure what their court's going to do. There's no way to know what's going to happen in Washington about this. It's hard to anticipate the future. What I'm suggesting to companies, if you made changes because the overtime rules were coming into effect, for example, you gave promotions or raises to some people, or you hired somebody, but you hired them at $48,000 a year when you might have otherwise hired at $35,000, so the person would be exempt. I don't recommend that you claw back that raise. I don't recommend you claw back that hiring because of the fact that you could be vulnerable to being sued for breach of contract, unjust enrichment, detrimental reliance, and a host of other civil claims that could be brought. You also have massive morale problems if you claw back. Conversely, if you hadn't yet taken action because it wasn't yet December 1st, you don't need to take action right now. You can wait to see what happens with the Fifth Circuit, or if it actually goes up to the Supremes, or what happens in Washington if they come up with a new program. Wait and see what happens there. But be ready to move quickly, because you may not have a lot of time once a ruling comes down.
David, very interesting subject. If somebody wants to find you at the Wagner Law Group, how would they do that?
They can call me at 617-357-5200, or they can email me, D for David, Gabor, G-A-B-O-R, not related to Jaja and Ava, at the Wagner Law Group. Gabor at WagnerLawGroup.com.
Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks, David.
I look forward to talking to you again through the next year on how this is all playing its way out.
Likewise, and happy holidays.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank Mark Furman and the law firm of Tarla, Breed, Hart & Rogers as well for hosting us. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after these messages.